Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann.
Joining us on Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann today, we've got Mike Bolhase. He's well known as a special investigator. And Mike, you're joining us today to give us a little bit of a background and some information on why there's been such a surge in kidnappings in the Eastern Cape in the last year or so. More and more, we hear of these crimes recently brought into profile by the kidnapping of the vice president of the Nelson Mandela Bay Business Chamber, Mr. Calvin Naidoo, who thankfully has been released. But why such an increase? Why such a surge in these crimes?
How's it, everybody, and thank you for the opportunity. Serious violent crime has always escalated due to the fact that these crimes pay, it can be committed, the criminals can commit it and get away with it, and it very clearly shows that this is a, shall we call, a crime that works very well. They plan it very well, and once they've executed the kidnapping, or any of these extreme violent crimes where money is involved, they get away with not leaving much information or forensic information or evidence or clues behind. And then they have the most valuable thing in their possession, which is a human being. And humans have become merchandise. And if you want the human back, they know that people are close, they loved, and they by then also have done a thorough investigation in who's involved and who will be involved and what is the worth of that person. And according to that worth, they will then contact and say this is what they want. And then the once that negotiation effort has been decided on an amount, the person will be released. But sometimes the person is killed as well. So serious violent crime cases is unfortunately, in the eyes of the criminals, something that is a working crime. And you know, crime begets crime. If one crime works, other criminals will escalate to that level of crime and get involved and do it as well. So kidnapping is on the rise.
When we hear of victims being released, the public's never specifically told, but are we to assume that ransoms have been paid in those cases?
Yeah, ransom have been paid, and the listeners must understand, if you really go into visualizing kidnapping, and it would be important to do so. So you think for yourself, you're a businessman or a businesswoman, you know you are value, you're rich, you have a lot of worth, and if you see gunmen coming for you at an intersection or when you've left the mall, or outside your gate, immediately the penny drops why they are there for you. They want you or they want whatever you have. So visualize that for a moment, and then you are taken, and whilst driving they take your phone, and usually all the information of you and your family, your business is on it. And this is here where I want to warn the public again. I've warned umpteenth of times that you must be extremely careful with your digital and electronic communications, because they take that phone, and with that phone they just top up the cherry on the cake on all the intelligence that they already have of you.
Yeah.
And they use that against you and your family or business partners, etc. And you are clearly stated what is the rules while you're in their possession. You'll have a speaker. You will have enforcers. This is a well-oiled machine, gangsters. They know how to do it, syndicate. And they obviously leave absolutely no evidence, information behind. They are totally obscured with their clothing and stuff. So it's very difficult if we afterwards do a debriefing or an investigation. That they give evidence and information. But before we get to the end of this visualizing this whole effect, you are kept, you are sometimes tortured, phone calls are made to give proof of life. Your bank manager has said that if he doesn't pay, he's going to be killed. They'll sooner take the phone and from the guy whilst he's speaking to the bank manager and say that we have him, and if you don't pay or do this, that, or the other, or get involved, or get authorities involved, or anything, we will kill this man. So with what has happened in our country, everybody knows how dangerous kidnapping is and that there could be loss of life. You could be raped, killed. You could be never found. So once that realization, it's like ice cold water hitting you while they take you and the family members and those who are involved, you get a situation where the people have two choices. They involve the authorities, and they should, and they do. Many a times they don't, eh? Just remember that. Many of these kidnappings aren't ever reported. Never. It's sorted in-house, as we call it. But those that are reported, the decision would be, do we go public? Does the police announce it all? Does it go to the media? Do they appoint us as specialists where we send out a project and so forth? And it's a difficult decision, depending the profile of the kidnappers.
What would your advice be to someone who is a victim or has a family member who's kidnapped?
Well, you know, our advice is that the communication is the most important. It's very difficult to explain in a short period of time, but somebody with good communication skills, I believe the authorities must always be involved, or specialists like ourselves, so that the communication line keeps the person alive. And you have to do whatever it takes to get the person back alive. So the negotiations is of extreme importance, and you need specialists to do that. The decision then can be made if the investigation is exposed to the public or not, and if it's in the slightest concern that the person might be killed if that is done, you don't. So my advice is to get extreme expert help and to make sure that communications is always in the best form in order to preserve life.
Now, without getting into any specifics, Mr. Bolhes, in the case of Mr. Calvin Naidu, your organization was involved in that particular case. The husband and wife team, the Kutzers, I think, were working on your behalf. What can you tell us about that, and what is it that led to his release and his safe release in the end? What can we learn from that?
Well, everything, as I've explained, up to the point of release is the reason. So I just want to finish up there by stating that the release in itself is also an extreme situation, because the man, in this case, Calvin, would be extremely threatened and intimidated. And things like, you know, you're going to be released, you have been paid for, but if you do this, that or the other will come again for you. We'll come for your family. Look at what we have of you. We have everything of you. We have got all your banking details. We've got all your family members. We have all your business partners, your business. There's nothing we don't have of you. Take that in consideration. So do as you're told. You are released. But if you one step wrong, we will come. We'll pick you up again or kill you. Remember, the criminals in this level, this high-level kidnappings, have no qualms in to say what they mean and mean what they say. They're extremely dangerous. And, you know, you're flaunting guns constantly and threatening with knives, and he was tortured. And, you know, that all makes, once again, the visualization is very important. If those serious threats are made of your loved ones, your kids, and everything that you have and possess,
sure.
Many of these people leave the country. They never come back, many of them. But many of them go into isolation. They don't talk about it afterwards. They don't give media interviews. They don't give us information. They don't give the Hawks information. They don't give specialized units the information because of fear. So you also have to consider that the trust issue between an extremely valuable businessman like Calvin here and many others with the authorities and those involved is also many a times not on the level that it should be, because information leaks out. And there are authorities that are corrupt, and there are those that are close by that might have been involved in the kidnapping by giving information.
Wow.
So a kidnapping never goes down with an extreme intelligence gathering, investigation, evaluation, and a risk analysis by the gangsters, the kidnappers. This is what we in any way do as specialist investigators. Those routes we do take, they do the same. So you wouldn't know who to trust, who to speak to, and what will leak out. Sometimes there are family members involved in the kidnapping, like we've seen in the Moti case. In so many of these cases, one out of three, we have seen that there was some form of very, very close parties involved in the kidnapping, giving the information.
Wow.
And it's also very difficult to prove, because you have a case here, it's like a rape case. Nobody wants to come forward and say anything because there's a stigma to it. And there's an extreme overhanging threat of life and intimidation that prohibits people from afterwards getting involved and assisting.
We rarely hear of arrests unless they're very low profile. Are we going to find the perpetrators of the Calvin Naidoo case?
You know, you are correct. There are very seldom extreme on this level. Remember, there's many levels of kidnapping. We are talking of the one today is the highest level. That's when an extreme businessman, man of extreme value has been targeted, or a person of worth that the kidnappers know others would pay for his release. So that's the highest form of kidnapping. And in this level, as I've said, these criminals are very connected. They might have a policeman in their pocket. They might have security in their pocket. They might have people very close to him in his pocket, workers, and sometimes even a family member, etc., etc. So they are, and they are clever, because they let that form of information fall at the release. Because they will say to the person that they release, we know everything of you, and we will know everything you do. So it's important, once again, that the listeners try to visualize yourself in a situation like that, with everything that I've explained, how serious kidnapping is. It's like a rape case. You never, ever can get over it. You can deal with it up to a point, but you will always be affected by it, and obviously you will be in extreme paranoia for the rest of your life, which is in a way a good thing, to a form of crime prevention, but it's not a life to live. And many a times it affects the family also in many, many ways, and even physically afterwards as well. But yeah, they are sometimes caught due to mistakes that are made on other kidnappings. So for instance, this gang keeps on doing this, which they will, because it pays and they can get away with it. But at a point they make a mistake, that's when they are caught.
Do you anticipate an even bigger increase or surge in these crimes going forward, or are we going to be able to curtail?
No, it will increase. However, I must compliment the police. Recently, the recent elections went very well. We have a new government, a better government in place, in my opinion. And there are definite positive moves into the police, getting highly specialized policemen involved in specialized units dealing with specific crimes, like crimes against women, children, and the elderly, kidnappings, cybercrime, and so forth, because you need highly, highly specialized policemen, authorities involved in order to curb crime. So I'm seeing that, and that we are working closely with all of them and assisting them. But the solution to curbing this crime lies in the proper relationship between government, the authorities, and the public. Unless the public gives the police and the authorities and the government a chance again. We have given umpteenth times chances to our authorities and the government, and it has failed. But this time I beg the public, the listeners, to really go out of their way and support the government, to support the police by being available and giving information. We need an intelligence and informant structure in South Africa, which we used to have many, many years ago, which we don't have now. An informant infrastructure with intelligence is the only way to prevent crime. In other words, the public comes forward and says, listen, I've heard this. There's a planning of this. These people have guns. These people are there and doing this, that, and the other. And I'm suspicious. Those informants and those people coming forward needs to be properly then trained how to deal with information and assist it. And that's how you get an informant eventually that is an expert informant. He gets paid properly. He gets looked after and he's totally protected. But that can only work if the police are totally trusted and if you've identified the non-corrupt policeman. So the first thing of order, if you as the public would consider what I've said, identify who you can trust. And if you don't trust anybody at your station or any policeman, they must call us or you. You need the media. We have the of the best media people in the world. That includes you. People
Thank
that
you.
Goes out of their way, it's pleasure, to inform the public and to teach the public and to do interviews like this in order to get the public informed. And the public must watch the news. You cannot say, oh, I'm not going to read this, it upsets me, and so forth. You need to know what's going on in your area and then in the country. If you don't know what's going on, you will be caught up in crime and you could be a victim. And then obviously, once you've identified the correct policeman that you trust, you must build that relationship. I mean, let me ask the public here, when last have you spent a day at your local police station? Just bringing some tea and coffee and some rusks and some bread and stuff and a bit of food and just sat down with them and just meet and greet with them.
It never happens. It never happens.
You see, that's the shock. There's no, you don't know the policeman that drives past you. You don't know him.
Yeah.
You don't know. You don't even know what the inside of a police station looks like. You don't know them there, and you need to build that relationship. You don't know the security guards in the area. You don't know your neighbor sometimes. People live isolated and obviously uninformed and unconnected, and that's a very, very big problem. If there's no relationships, how can you stand together? So it is a problem. You need to put everything aside, your political beliefs, your religious beliefs, your color, anything that is in the way of meeting and greeting and dealing and getting involved with other people, you should put aside with one common goal. This hour or this time or whatever we do together in future, we put all of that aside and concentrate on the common goal, and that's to identify crime. Investigate crime, do a proper risk analysis, solve crime and prevent crime.
We're going to leave it there. Specialist investigator Mike Bolhaes, really appreciate the comprehensive chat with you and look forward to catching up with you again soon on Behind the Herald Headlines, sir.
Anytime, and God bless us all, and let's stand together. The government, the authorities and the public stand together. I can tell you now, we can deal with the 1% of the 80 million people that's in South Africa, which are criminals. If we 79 million and they a million, we can stand against them and we can eradicate crime.
That was today's edition of Behind the Herald Headlines with Darren Mann.